Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Oh my goodness, I had so much fun doing my interview with Maria Desmondi last week, thinking about teaching and just how much she and I both have moved on from our teaching careers into other ways that we support kids and families. But this week and next week, I want to talk about those of you that are still in the trenches, that your passion project and the thing that you do the majority of your time that you're awake during the school year is pour into the next generation as teachers. Today, we're going to listen to an interview with Lori. She's going to share with you how she went from teaching in the school last spring to teaching at home and how she used the teacher workbox to make that transition, how she relabeled her files so you can do the same. And then next week, we'll be talking to Angela Watson. She's been on the podcast before. She has Truth for Teachers, which is her podcast, and she has the program, the 40-Hour Teacher Workweek Club. She's going to talk about how she has added more to that club and how she is also supporting teachers as they are weathering this pandemic with the rest of us. So I hope that those of you that are still in the teaching industry and parents and students that want to listen along will enjoy these next two episodes that are focused on you, the teachers who are going to pour into the next generation for the next 9 months. I am so excited to have Angela Watson back on the podcast. She was back a year and a half ago in December of 2018. We talked all about being former teachers and how we've created products to help teachers stay organized. And Angela's product specifically is for reducing the amount of hours you spend teaching. Mine is for organizing all the paperwork that goes with teaching, but a lot has happened in the teaching industry since we last talked in December of 2018, Angela. So can you please refresh the Organize 365 audience on the mission you have for the Truth for Teachers podcast and your 40-Hour Teacher Workweek Club?
Sure. Yeah, that just seems like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? You know, my mission, though, stays the same. And that's a great thing about having a mission, about knowing what your purpose is that it is enduring. It's timeless. It's something that you are always going to care about, and it's adaptable. So my mission really is to help teachers live a more purposeful and conscious life. So I think we get the message all the time that, you know, teaching is about the kids, but everything can't be kids first because mm-hmm. teachers are humans too. Mm-hmm. Teachers also have needs. Teachers also have a life. They have their own families. They experience trauma. They have complex emotional inner worlds and interpersonal relationships and life stressors that impact how they show up in the classroom. And so I think that personal development is just as integral to effective teaching mm-hmm. as professional development. Who you are as a person impacts the way that you build relationships with students and the way that you support them in learning. So in everything that I do, I try to look not only at the needs of the whole child, but also the whole teacher, because I want teachers to heal their trauma and unpack their biases and develop their mindset and really show up for kids as the best version of themselves.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, I think back to my teaching days and all the teachers that I know. It's almost like you're a double mom, like if that makes any sense to you. Like you're at school and you give everything you have to your kids in the classroom, like because you want to be the best for them and they come above all. And then you commute back to your house and then you give everything to your family at home if you have a spouse, if you have children. And so like you're a mom at school and you're a mom at home, and there is no there really is no you. Like you're supposed to do everything for yourself in July. And for the rest of the year, it's all about your students. And then when you're home, it's all about your family at home. And it is exhausting, but we love it. Like there is no teacher that's like, yep, and I just don't like it. No, they love it. Like they love it. They wouldn't have it any other way, but you can't pour out of an empty cup.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so exactly it. You can't only have the month of July to take care of yourself. It's just not enough.
And this year, it didn't even count because we were just worried the entire month. So it doesn't even count. There is no rejuvenation, no relaxation, no checking out. Just worry about what they were going to do in the fall. And now we're recording this in the middle to end of July. You'll be listening to it in the beginning of August. And they still don't know, mm-hmm. I'm sure, by the time you listen to this.
Well, it's been a tough summer.
It's so hard to tell. Yeah. Yeah. So no rest for the weary, right? Now, last week on the podcast, I talked to an Organize 365 teacher who pivoted her teacher workbox to work for her in remote learning this spring. And I know that you've been doing the same thing with your course for teachers as well. How has your podcast and your course done the same in the last, 4 to 5 months?
Yeah, I threw out all the planned podcast episodes this past March. I had the whole season lined up, ready to go. A lot of the interviews were done. And I just decided, you know what, this is just not what teachers need to hear right now. So many topics that you think are sort of evergreen, like teacher lunches. Well, if you're not packing a lunch anymore, you don't need to know about that. Right. some of the things that, you just sort of take for granted that are always going to be issues for teachers. Everything was just sort of flipped on its head. And so, what happens is our sort of conventional wisdom and the normal kinds of conversations that we have about the profession, a lot of that stuff just didn't apply anymore. And we really had to start thinking about new issues in new ways. So I scrapped everything for the podcast and decided to just speak directly to the heart of what I felt like teachers needed most at that time from what I could sense. And we're reworking 40 hour as well to support teachers in all kinds of situations. So the 40 hour teacher work week is supporting teachers who will be doing remote learning, those who will be doing hybrid models, and as well as those whose classrooms are reopening and are going to attempt to be doing safe distancing in the classroom. So it is a massive undertaking, but this is what the moment is called for. I think everybody is having to step up. I think pivot is the word of 2020, and adapt and be flexible. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to keep moving forward.
Yeah, I think, middle of March when people started staying at home, Ohio was the first state to say stay at home, and that's where I live. So we all started staying at home. And we were told, our 1 week spring break, we were going to get an extra bonus week the week before spring break and then take spring break and then maybe the week after. And so I quickly started making a 2 to 3 week plan. And I did let my regular recorded podcast episodes run, and I continued to record them. I was doing an 8 week series all about just foundational podcasts that I wanted recorded before the book came out, which came out yesterday at the time that you're listening to this.
Oh, congrats. That's so exciting.
Thank you. I'm so excited. But when I was thinking about pivoting the context of the podcast for me, for Organize 365, I ended up recording bonus podcasts almost every week and publishing those in addition to the Wednesday podcast I already had, the Thursday throwback, and then the Friday that I had already recorded. So I ended up with an extra podcast every week that was timely and relevant, but I still went with my pre-recorded content for those 8 weeks because I wanted those on the podcast in the future. And it really didn't matter when they went because they were all just my story. And the other thing is I couldn't figure out what I thought about the situation fast enough to record a podcast on a regular basis. You know what I mean? So I would have my regular content, which my audio engineer and everybody else could go ahead and try to fit into their new chaotic life and get that scheduled. And then I would just go live on a Facebook Live, or I would record a podcast early one morning. And then I would just send it to my audio engineer and say, whenever you can get this up, get it up. And then I would just write a newsletter and I would send out the newsletter and say, there's a bonus podcast. And it was, recording what a fellow CEO and I were doing in our business, or I can't even remember what the podcasts were, but it was as I was processing through things, I would record them and put them up, but I didn't want them to replace my regular content. And podcast listenership was so up and down during that time. In the beginning, there was just as much, and then there was definitely a lull as everybody was trying to figure out how to get acclimated at home, and then it has come back to the pre-lockdown levels. But our website traffic, age group, demographic changed wildly during that time. In the first couple of weeks, it was all people that were 55 and older coming to our website because they weren't dealing with kids schooling from home. And they were actually at home and they had more time. I was like, oh, okay, I'm speaking to baby boomers this week. And then a couple weeks in, it became, millennials. I was like, okay, I'm speaking. And so I kind of would cater my bonus podcast to whoever was coming up for air to listen for something for me and then going back underwater to try to figure this out.
That's really cool. That's a great approach.
I don't think there's a right or a wrong approach, but it is hard as you are living through the event to walk somebody else through the event.
Yes.
And I just, it's so, so much fun. We just had Maria Desmondi on the podcast as well. And she talks about how she created, she's a children's author, how she created a homeschool that she thought was going to last 3 weeks on her Instagram channel that ended up lasting, I think it was like 10 weeks.
Wow.
She just kept going with it. You know, like I tried to start something like that, but I couldn't keep it up. And it's interesting as a business owner and as an entrepreneur and as a social media, using social media for your business, how to pivot, how to create that content that is relevant, and then how to sustain that while you're still going through this uncharted territory.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. And I mostly just shared from the heart. I just shared what I was struggling with, what I was wondering, what my hopes were. You know, there's a lot of talk about reimagining schools and the way that kids mm-hmm. learn. So I kind of shared my, you know, what I would like to see happen from that. And I also shared a lot of ideas from teachers. So I would go into the 40-hour Facebook group and say, you know, tell me about the kids who remote learning is working for, because there is a whole segment of students who are so much happier learning from home. I don't think they're the majority, but they do exist, and that matters. So tell me what's working. What is actually better about this? What's something we might want to hold on to in the future? And I just compiled their answers and shared that on the podcast, some of the great things that were happening. And so it was a lot of stuff like that too, like trying to find out what was actually going well in classrooms and trying to share some of those emerging best practices. Because as you said, like when you're still processing everything and living through it with people, and this is a position none of us have ever been in before, that's really all I think we can do is just share, you know, share stories, share what we're experiencing in the moment. And I think knowing that you're not alone and going through that stuff is really helpful.
110%. I mean, I was finding all kinds of new podcasts about business owners who had been through the Great Recession, because I had not been, and what they did with their teams and how they led and what they did with inventory orders. And like, I was downloading and consuming podcasts I would have never downloaded and consumed before. So I think just being able to talk about this with people who have maybe not this exact same experience, but who have similar experiences. So I really want to deep dive into you and a couple of different people who will be listening, and specifically from their point of view, you know, just really what's going on. So first, I want to talk about, what are you noticing that are the biggest challenges for teachers with their students? So from the teacher perspective, what are the biggest challenges they're facing with their students when they are teaching remotely?
I think one of the things that I'm hearing a lot about and that I see as the biggest problem is really overcoming the inequities of the situation and trying to figure out how to meet individual student needs when we're dealing with such a diverse range of experiences right now. You know, some kids are self-directed, others need way more support. Some are thriving with remote learning, others hate it. So trying to understand what is actually happening with that student when they're not right in front of you, and you've never had to do that before, you know, and sometimes the students are not even showing up. So they're not even coming to virtual class. They're not turning anything at all. And I saw that was just an immense frustration for teachers. They are bending over backwards, doing everything they can to create an entire new way of teaching. And then like four kids show up. And at the same time, like you can't blame the kids, you know, it's a crisis. You don't know what's going on in the home. You don't know what kind of device access they have, what kind of Wi-Fi access they have. Maybe they're caring for siblings. I mean, it's just, there's all kinds of things happening. That's been really frustrating for teachers. You want to help. That's what a teacher's nature is. And you can't, at least not in the ways that you know how to do. So I think keeping that engagement up and making sure that it actually meets the needs of individual learners, especially kids who have special needs or English language learners, others who are used to getting really individualized support.
Yep.
That's been a real challenge for distance learning.
I've also heard and observed that teachers are actually working even more hours remote working, because they're changing all their lessons to be remote available. And then they're actually teaching the children online and following up with them and making phone calls and all of those things. And then they're in their email inbox with the parents all night long, trying to make sure they know the right assignment or where do you find it or where is this Dropbox. And we're going to talk from the parent perspective in a minute, but for the teachers, they went from working long hours to working even longer hours because they were both teaching the students, but also teaching the parents and then trying to manage, like you said, all that turn in.
Exactly.
I hear a lot of the options. I on Facebook, I'm reading a lot of comments of what people are choosing to do with their children. And a lot of the states are offering different options. And one of them is if you choose virtual, you had to opt in for virtual in our school district already. But if you choose virtual, it's not actually through the school district, or it's through the school district, but it's not through your local teacher. It's like a totally different program, which I think is going to be great.
Wow.
So they're running a virtual program, a virtual school, in addition to the in-person school. And if you're in the in-person school and it has to go remote, then that teacher will go remote with you. And then I know a lot of parents are choosing Connections Academy or something like that, like an actual virtual school that's been a virtual school for a long time. And you mentioned the inequities of kids in the remote learning situation. I have seen online, and it was a thought that I had as well, a couple of parents saying, I'm choosing to virtually school my child or put them in a Connections Academy or something like that to open up a space in the school for a child whose parents can't do that because I can work from home or my child does not need the extra services. So I am going to school my child from home for many reasons, but one of which is to open up that space in the classroom for children who that really is the best placement for them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so there's so many different things going on right now. Oh my gosh.
So many, like we can't, our podcast would be too long. But I, you know, as I was reading this whole discussion, it was like, it had only been posted an hour before and had 86 comments about what parents were choosing, whether virtual or in person. And multiple said, I have the ability to school from home. And so I am doing it so that there are spaces in in-person classrooms for the more disadvantaged children. And I think that probably comes directly out of the Black Lives Matter group. I don't know if people would necessarily have been thinking about it that way 2 months ago.
That's really interesting. I'm not sure I've really thought about that, because if you pull your child out of public school, then the school loses funding, which could result in teacher layoffs, no?
Oh, no. If they choose the virtual public school offering, then no, the school still gets the money for the child. If you choose Connections Academy, then yes. But if you just choose the virtual public school option, then the school still gets the state funding.
Okay. Wow.
Because the school can't have all of the children show up.
That's right.
So they have to offer this option. So they're going to get their state funding. But if you can only have, so Cincinnati Public, if you can only have 50% of the children go to Cincinnati Public, then 50% of those have to be schooled from home, or you know what I mean? And so there are children that cannot be, because their parents can't work from home, or the parents can't take off work. Or if they do, then they're just not going to get the education, or they don't have the Wi-Fi, or they don't have the whatever.
That's right. And what I really like about that is that there are dedicated teachers for online and dedicated teachers for in-person, because I'm seeing way too many districts talking about having one teacher do both. One district I heard about, you're supposed to be supporting the online students during your prep time and before and after school, which is just absolutely nuts. The worst idea that I've heard so far is live streaming classes for kids who are at home.
Now, I would like that, Angela. I would actually like that.
You're kidding.
No. Well, as a parent, I would, because then I put my kid in front of the computer and I would check every 45 minutes at the break time, like, okay, now get out your math book. Like, I would prefer that over them doing a 15 minute and then having my child work one-on-one. But my kids have learning disabilities. They only learn when the teacher is directly teaching them. So this whole online, go now do your worksheet independently, there's no independent with my kids. I would love that live stream virtual. And I wonder, you know, like, and this is totally off track, but what if, you know, parents learned a lot about their kids in the spring. They learned what is working, what isn't working. They learned a lot. And so what if in the future there are a lot of options? Because all these anxious kids are thrilled to be schooling from home, let me just tell you. Mm-hmm. But in a different pod of people I was with the other day, they said of all their friends, the kids who were in general education have all opted to school at home. And the kids who are in advanced classes have all opted to school at school because the advanced classes aren't going to be taught online, or they're afraid they're going to fall behind. I thought, well, that's interesting. I mean, it just depends on what perspective you're going from, what your child needs. And does school need to be the same for all? I don't think it does.
That's right. And that leads us right back to that biggest challenge about differentiating for individual needs, because there isn't going to be a one size fits all. And when it comes to the live streaming classes, my concern with that, in addition to privacy violations, in addition to the fact that things happen in the classroom that really should not be broadcast into people's homes.
Are you talking about like live streaming a teacher teaching live children?
So, Yes.
So I'm talking about a teacher live streaming to kids all day long. Like, okay, now we're going to take a 15-minute break. Come back after you get your juice box. Like, no, I one see. Teacher.
Right, right. No, that I think is fantastic. I'm talking about a teacher being responsible for teaching in person and remote at the same time. So you turn on the camera in your classroom. This is actually happening. And I can't even wrap my head around what a terrible idea this is, because the kids learning at home, it doesn't work at the same pace. So the teacher says, you know, take out your laptop. Well, the kid at home already has their laptop. Now they're sitting there waiting for 5 minutes for everyone else to get on the same page. And then the teacher has to deal with this interruption. And then the intercom comes on and then the phone rings. And then this happens. And the kid at home is just sitting there like, oh my gosh, I could have been done. If this was like a 10-minute screencast, I could have like watched the instruction and been done. Like, the pacing's not even the same. The pedagogy's not the same.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to be devil's advocate, because my kids have processing delays. And so they need all of that, what you're calling wasted time, in order to get their mind around, now we're doing math. Okay, I need to be in this thing. Okay, I need to have this open. They need that time to do it, because it was just like, okay, math. Then by the time you got to your instruction, you'd be on like sentence 10 and my kids are finally on where they're supposed to be. So they need, I mean, that buffer time for kids with ADHD, kids with low processing speed, they need that slower pace and all that transitions. Like, and we lost all those transitions when we came home.
What if it's pre-recorded though? So they can pause and fast forward and rewind.
Yeah, but it's pre-recorded. So there isn't that, there's an engagement factor in live that holds people's attention, because you're not quite sure what's going to happen. And you're not sure if the teacher's going to call on you over in the chat or whatever. Whereas if it's recorded, like, it loses some of that adrenaline.
So basically, we're not going to be able to solve all of these problems.
Right.
And this 45-minute podcast. Who knew, Lisa? I just thought the two of us together,
It turns out that we can't even solve all these problems. And it is, it's like, whoever you talk to, you're going to be thinking about your child.
That's
and
right.
what your child needs. And your child is 100% different than every other child. So
that's right.
It's like, yeah. Okay, so I want to switch then from the teachers to the students. We've kind of already done this, but what are you noticing to be the biggest challenges for parents with their students who are teaching remotely?
One concern that I've heard a lot over and over was around communication. So feeling like there was either over-communication or under-communication with teachers. So some parents were getting multiple emails a day from each of their child's teachers. So you have multiple kids, like let's say you have three kids and they each have eight teachers. Right. And then each of those eight teachers emailing you four times a day with contradicting instructions. And this one wants you to use this link, but this one wants you to submit through this thing. And it was so overwhelming. Like, it's a full-time job just keeping up with that. You sound like you really relate to this.
I didn't experience it, but I heard it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just understanding what needs to be done and what the tech tools are and how to submit assignments, that is just so overwhelming. And then there are other parents who are feeling like, where are my child's teachers? I am not getting a response back. I don't know what my kid is supposed to be doing. And it was really tough for everyone to figure out what the procedures were going to be. Teachers and parents were floundering. And, you know, particularly since I feel like expectations were changing a lot on teachers too, you know, and at first we thought this was just going to be for a week or two. We didn't know it was going to go on through the end of the year. So it's just, you know, this sort of like hack job of just, you know, piecing things together, and no one really knew what was going on. So I am optimistic that this is going to be much more streamlined in terms of communication for the new school year, because I think it's going to be a situation where we have more time to prepare. And also we've been able to learn from what worked and what didn't this past spring. Hopefully things can be streamlined and simplified and kind of get everyone on the same page more when school starts.
Yeah, totally. And that the reason why I'm so emphatic is that is the number one thing I heard in the Organized 365 community and my personal friends. And so we created a planner for grade school and middle school, and a different one for high school and college, where literally the whole goal of this planner is to record all of your lessons and then all of your assignments so that you can mark them in a physical planner, because it's easier, even though it's all available online, it's easier for students to see how much work they have to do if it's written out. And it's easier to parents see what's done when you can see what's scratched off and what's not scratched off. So
I love it.
The old fashioned planner is coming back, people. You can go digital by October if it works for you. But most students, and one of the big things that I saw leave a lot of our audience members' lives when the kids came to remote instruction, is that the teacher created a structure of the day. There was a place where you got assignments written on the board, or even if it's digital now, there was a routine, a structure, a cadence to the school day that left when they went home. And it's amazing how much more you can remember when you do it in order. Like, just try tomorrow morning to get up, brush your teeth, then go to the bathroom, then do your makeup, then shower. Like, you can't even do it. Like, you have to do it in the order that you always do it. Mm-hmm. Like, I get up, I go to the bathroom, I shower, I brush my teeth, I do my makeup. Like, that's the order I do it in. If I get up and I were to shower first, like, I wouldn't forget to go to the bathroom, but I might forget to brush my teeth. And I'm like, what's the thing? And then you're like, oh shoot. Or if you put the deodorant on, like, you have a morning rhythm that you do without even thinking about it. And when you get interrupted, that's when you end up in the car and you forgot to put on deodorant, was because something interrupted you in your morning routine. Kids have mm-hmm. that at school. That's what we do in August and the beginning of September, is create this structure routine of, this is going to be the cadence. This is the order. We always go to the bathroom after math and before this, and then we wash our hands, and then you do, and all of that went away. And mm-hmm. it's super important that we create that at home if we're going to be schooling from home as well, because you remember, oh yes, it's, I do this and then I practice spelling and then I do this and then I do this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. What are you noticing are the biggest challenges for teachers with their administration tasks being remote?
I think just lack of direction, lack of support, lack of answers. That was probably the main thing that I've heard. It wasn't clear what was expected for teachers, and the expectations were changing daily. So, you know, it's just really hard to plan good lessons and support students well in that kind of circumstance. So again, I'm hopeful that once things start rolling this school year, we'll see less of that and we can start mm-hmm. planning more long-term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And are you, because you work with teachers primarily on getting their amount of hours they work in the classroom reduced to a more manageable amount. The goal is 40. They're not going to get to 40, but the goal is 40, so that they have more hours for the things that they want to do or their household related things. How are teachers in this pandemic finding time for their non-teaching related tasks when the classroom is now in their home?
So it's called 40 hour because most teachers are contracted to work around 40 hours a week. So what we want to try to do is really maximize those hours, so you're mm-hmm. not working endlessly on nights and weekends. Mm-hmm. You know, and to your point about how to find time for those non-teaching related tasks, this has to be an intentional choice. Because yeah. if you don't decide in advance how many hours you're willing to dedicate to work, it will just mm-hmm. expand forever.
And
you'll just, yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. It really has to be an intentional decision. And as you mentioned, a lot of teachers were up late at night answering email, you know, during emergency distance teaching this past spring, because they were struggling to find time earlier in the day, or sometimes they just felt pressure to get back to families and kids right away. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a crisis. We didn't have a lot of warning about the transition to remote learning. And it's really hard to set boundaries with people who are experiencing a crisis. You don't want to let folks down. You want to, you know, reassure people and keep this sense of normality. But that kind of work habits where you're answering email at 11 o'clock at night every night, it's just not sustainable. And I think for the coming school year, it's going to be really essential to carve out time where you not only don't work, but you don't think about work. You're not strategizing. Mm-hmm. You're not worrying. You're not thinking up new teaching ideas. You're just giving yourself a total break from all things school related. And I try to do that myself, usually from Friday evening until Sunday morning. And if a thought crosses my mind about work during that time, I try to just remind myself, all of these problems will still be there for me later.
Yeah, true.
I don't have to think about them right now. I just don't.
Yeah.
And in fact, I will do a better job trying to solve those problems if I give myself a break from thinking about it, because my mind is always sort of going. I'm always thinking up new ideas and that kind of thing. But right now, there's just too many massive problems to solve. So it's not like you could just sit down for a few hours and work it all out and then relax. We have to learn how to carve out relaxation time in the middle of all the work and the stress, because I just don't think that's going away anytime soon. So dedicating time for family, for exercise, for getting fresh air, for whatever's important to you is really important. Mm-hmm. Teachers aren't contracted to work evenings and weekends. So you can set the schedule. Tell families, I respond to emails or I respond to live chat between 3 and 5 p.m. Or, you know, maybe you set aside 7 to 8 p.m., some later evenings for working parents. So they'll know when you are available, when they'll hear back from you, without you setting up that expectation that you're just reachable 24/7 and you'll just respond instantly to anything they want. You can really set your availability and you can create those boundaries.
Mm. And what are some positives for teachers and students that you've seen in this new normal?
I think that we needed a shakeup. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that it's not like quote unquote normal before was so fantastic for everybody. Everybody was busy, stressed out. We had a lot of systemic and structural issues that we were grappling with. You know, we needed a reimagining. And this wasn't the way that any of us would have wanted to do it. But I think the trajectory we were on before just was not sustainable. So I think it's an opportunity to sort of take a step back eventually, you know, maybe not in this particular moment, but at some point really think about what is essential and what is worth spending our time on. What's really important for kids to know and learn and do. And we're having to reevaluate all of those things right now. So I'm hopeful we can come out on the other side of this with deeper understandings about what it means to live a meaningful life and what it means to really raise our children well and give them a good education.
Yeah. And as you give that answer, I'm thinking about, and I was going to mention this before I asked that question, but I'm glad I didn't now. As you were mentioning how teachers, you know, are not contractually obligated to evenings and weekends, and I'm sitting here thinking, but you're giving my kid homework on evenings and weekends. And if I can't get a hold of you and I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm spending my whole evening and weekends doing all this homework so that they're ready for this class, like, and as you're giving that answer, I'm thinking, yeah, right. Can parents have their evenings and weekends back? Can we reduce the amount that the kids are doing in the evening and weekends? Is all of this stuff really totally necessary? It just seems like it is. So many kids with anxiety loved lockdown. They loved it. Like, their parents have no idea how they're going to get them to go back to school when it's time to go back to school, because their anxiety was reduced because they had more time with their parents. And while, you know, a lot of children had struggled because they don't learn this way, it was hard to get their assignments turned in, I think by the time we got to week 6 and 7 of lockdown and realized it wasn't going anywhere, and parents were like, oh, just forget it. Like, this is what we're going to do, and this is what's going to work for our kids. And they stopped trying to meet everyone else's expectations and just started going ahead and enjoying the dinner hour and saying, fine, we're just going to ride bikes instead of worrying about this. Like, is the quantity that we are trying to push through our kids in the schools, is it really necessary? Do we have to have all of this? Is all of this urgent and important? Or is some of it just we keep adding on the new urgent and important to what we've always had and we haven't called any of it out?
That's exactly right. I'm 100% with you. There's no reason for parents and kids to be spending all evening on homework and things like that. There's no research to back up the effectiveness. Why are we doing that? Why are we creating additional work for everyone? It's more work for the teacher too. Like, I think we really need to take that step back and figure out what do kids really need to know, especially in a situation like this, where I think everyone's bandwidth is really limited and we're just not going to have optimal conditions for learning this year. So what is most important and how can we do that in a really streamlined way that doesn't, for me, involve kids having to sit in front of a computer for 6 hours a day or necessarily even sitting in school for 6 hours a day and then having to do more work again in the evenings? I think there are better ways to do it, and I'm hopeful that we can move in those directions.
Yeah, because I just think as a working parent, I mean, at least one of these parents is working, like at a minimum. Mm-hmm. But in most families, both of them are working. And for a lot of these teachers, they also have students that are learning in other people's classes, and they're doing the teaching part and the parenting part. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is yet, but I think we've been locked down long enough so that we really start looking for the true solutions versus just trying to get back to an old normal that wasn't really working in a lot of industries. Like, a lot of industries that are being shaken up right now were already ripe for a change. We just didn't know what was going to be the catalyst for that change. And we're changing so many at one time, but it doesn't mean that each one didn't need to be changed to begin with.
Oh, that's so well said.
Well, thank you. Okay, so let's give some helpful tips. Is there anything that you found that helps most teachers as they move to teaching remotely? If, you know, I'm thinking if you're going to have half class sizes in schools, we may have some teachers out of necessity or out of healthcare risks or whatever that are not going to be in the classroom next year, and they're going to be running the online component of their district's schooling, and other ones will be in the classroom, specifically for the teachers that are going to be at home, that are going to be teaching their classes remotely. Anything that you have heard or seen is really helpful.
When it comes to the teaching remotely, I think we need to remember that you can't duplicate face-to-face instruction that way. It's just not the same thing. Some things take a lot longer when you're doing them remotely. Some things take a lot less time. And the pedagogy is different. The methods of engagement are different. The way that you work with with students' attention spans, the way you give breaks is different. So I think letting go of how we wish things could be is really important. We're not going to be able to create an online replication of everything that we used to do offline. And that's true in our personal lives too. You know, like we've tried to do like, you know, I've seen people doing like Zoom happy hours and like everything Zoom. Yeah. You can't just take your whole social life and put it on the internet. It just doesn't.
Why not?
It's not the same.
Come on, Angela.
You could try. I mean, okay, I'll speak for myself. I can't do it. It's just not as fulfilling for me. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I think accepting that things are going to have to be different this year, that they're not going to be ideal, they're not going to be optimal, is really important. We have to change the standards, these rigid standards we have that we measure ourselves by and that we measure our students' success by, and be more flexible, be more adaptable with it. And, you know, our structures of school are not really set up for flexibility and things like that. But again, as you're saying, we need these kinds of changes. They should have been more flexible to begin with. We were holding kids to, I think, standards that were unrealistic and unnecessary. Like, you have to meet these benchmarks by these age. Says who? Who? It's time for reimagining. We've got to do better by kids.
And when I think about, you know, the amount of school that we are going to cram into kids in the next school year, I think in my own business, like, I have goals that are that big for my own business, you know, but when it comes to actually doing them, I have to break them out by quarter and by week and by day. And every time I do that, I realize I have unrealistic expectations. My expectations are too big and my goals are too big. So then I have a good, better, best goal. And like, okay, well, good is what has to happen no matter what. And then better is like, oh, that'd be really fun. And then best is like, if I was home alone for a month doing only work, this is what I'd be able to get done. Like, when we go to schooling from home, I think a good, better, best scenario and a focus of the day, like attainable goals and celebrating wins and wow, you got this done versus okay, but there's eight more things to do, so get going. You know, just like, it's just defeating from the get-go if we can just make it more okay. I just think we have so many opportunities right now. We are living through transformational history in like 97 different ways. Like, pick anything, pick any industry, any facet of life is totally being revolutionarily changed right now. Dive into it for a year. And learning is contagious. It's something that you can't get people to stop learning if you tried. And yet, sometimes when we put kids into a school setting or we put these school parameters on it, we just kill the desire to learn. And right now, I don't know about you, but I'm reading more books, listening to more podcasts, talking to more people about diverse things. Like, I haven't had a stereotypical conversation in months and I'm learning so much, but I couldn't have figured it out in a lesson plan. I know that's not realistic for school districts, but for those of you that it's possible, like, I'd definitely be homeschooling this year. Like, there's just so many possibilities for learning right now. And if you're inquisitive at all, like, you would learn so much about so many things that are so relevant. Like, government, we are learning on a global scale what global government is like, what federal government, state government, local government, the lawsuits that are coming, the Supreme Court decisions. Like, there is so much happening in our government and our law. I could dive into that for a whole year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many different ways to learn besides just the really structured things that we have written in the standards for what kids supposedly need to learn at that moment. There's so much beyond that if we're open to possibilities, like you're saying.
And you know, just even for teachers, if you have an administration that is looking for possible solutions and you're not one of the grades that is going to have the standard test, if they're going to have the standard test, like, how can you take your curriculum and do more exploratory conversational Zoom classes and journaling and still meet your state objectives without the textbook learning that we've been doing on past history when we're actually living through history, which I know is a little bit more work for the teacher, but it also is, she or he also gets to research too and learn and grow and expand. And yeah.
Imagine the engagement too.
Oh, yeah.
That's a huge part of the battle right now, is getting kids to focus and, well, and care parents, about what's happening.
I mean, parents are going to get engaged in that kind of a homework assignment, you know? So yeah, let's all learn. Let's all learn together. Okay. So last question I want to ask you. I have found that personally being isolated in our homes has become the biggest challenge for me in this new way of working. I'm an extrovert. I'm fine. Like, I don't have to get out that much. Zoom actually does work for me, or Instagram stories or whatever. But people are so lonely. Even introverts are so lonely for people to talk to. And for me, like, I'm finding new podcasts for business owners of my size business who can deal with the issues that I'm dealing with. I know that you have community for teachers. Can you explain what communities you have for teachers to be able to talk and connect and process through some of these big ideas and hard choices?
Yes, you're so right. This is not something that any of us can go through alone. And it's so helpful to know that it's not just you. And this is where the internet is powerful. You know, as much as I can say, I'm not going to replicate my whole life, my whole offline life online. A lot of my socialization, a lot of my networking, a lot of my professional and personal growth does come from interacting with people online, because you just have access to so many more viewpoints and so many more experiences. And there's so many people that I really love and respect and admire and learn from who don't live in proximity to me anyway. So, I think these online communities are super helpful. I do a lot of it through Facebook groups. There's one for my podcast, which is Truth for Teachers. So we're in there discussing all those episodes. Cause I mean, you know, when you put out a podcast, it kind of feels like you're just speaking into the void. It's like, who's listening? What are they thinking? It's not a two-way conversation necessarily with the audience. So I love being able to talk with people who are listening and you know, hear what their thoughts are and their perspective. So I do that. And there's also Facebook group communities for 40 Hour. And I just think that's so life-giving. It's so affirming to have a place where you can collaborate with like-minded people who have similar goals and interacting with people outside of your circle. I think teachers and families all over the world right now are looking for ways to make this whole situation work. And there's so much that we can learn from each other's experiences.
And is this a free group people can join, or is it only part of your 40-hour Teacher Work Week Club?
So the Truth for Teachers Facebook group is free. That's open to everyone. You can just search for that on Facebook. The Facebook group for 40 Hour is part of the program. So it's something that we offer once a year. It's a year-long program. It starts in summer, and it gives teachers ongoing support throughout the school year. Because what you need every season of the school year is different. What you need in August is different from what you need in January or from April. So we recently closed the doors. The cutoff date's always July 15th, but you know, this is such an unusual year. It's so hard to make commitments. It's so hard when everything feels uncertain to want to to plan for something. And I know a lot of folks were not ready to plan for the new school year in early July. They just didn't have the answers they needed from their districts. Mm-hmm. So we are experimenting with ways to let folks get in the group a little closer to the start of the school year. And of course, any of your listeners who are just finding out about this are welcome to join. We would love to have you really think about how to be intentional with your time and maximize those work hours so that you're really making a big impact for kids, but it's not consuming every minute of your life.
Yes. And some of you are already in Angela's program, and you also have the Teacher Workbox. And those of you that have both have told me that these two systems, like, alone, they're great, but together it's like rocket fuel.
Yes,
like to have a Teacher Workbox and to have Angela's 40-hour Teacher Workweek Club. Now, the investment for a Teacher Workbox is $150. What is the investment for the 40-hour Teacher Workweek Club?
Yep, same thing, $149.
That's what I thought. Yeah, so they're both $149. And you can find out more information by going to organize365.com/Angela, and that will take you to the super secret sign-up link. Because I was like, Angela, I know you're clothing, but I want to have you on the podcast, and I know people are going to want to get in. And I know it's not for everyone. And, you know, $300 to invest is a lot of money, especially on a teacher's salary. But for me, like, you save time, and my time over the course of an entire year, if you did a dollar a day, like, is totally worth the time and sanity you're going to save. And I think that even though we have our weekly workbox club for 90 minutes where you go through your teacher workbox, which you can do with us, our workbox club is very much focused more on entrepreneurs, corporate, direct sales. I know that you are going to get a lot more community questions answered, diverse ideas about running in person, out of person, all the various things that you're going to do in school. All of those are represented in Angela's community. Her community of teachers is extremely bigger than mine. And so I would encourage you, if you're only going to pick one, I would actually encourage you to probably do the 40-hour Teacher Workweek Club and get that under control, and then come back and get a teacher workbox, just because I know the support in the community is going to be worth every penny.
Well, thank you for that, Lisa. I appreciate it. Your recommendation means a lot.
Oh, well, I was so excited that you said you would come back on the podcast. And if you guys were live yesterday on book launch day, someone got a ticket to join the 40-hour Teacher Workweek Club as a special gift that Angela donated. So thank you so much for supporting book launch day. You've just been so awesome. So it's been so much fun. And to all the teachers out there and all the parents and all the students, which is a lot of you, we are excited. Angela and I are really excited for your next school year. It is not going to be typical. It is not going to be rote, but it is going to be memorable, and you're going to learn a lot. Like, you're going to learn a lot, period, just about life in general, living through history, and you're going to learn a lot in school. I know that the kids are ready to go back, and the teachers are ready to teach you, and the parents are ready to support, and together, it's going to be an amazing year.
That's such a great thought to end on. I love that. Let's make it happen.
Thank you, Angela.
Thanks, Lisa.
Teachers, I can't say thank you enough. I've been a teacher, my children have benefited from teachers, and now I'm kind of a teacher of adults, if you know what I mean. We love what you're doing. We know that you're going to have an exceptional school year. We know it's going to be different, but hey, as teachers, have you ever had a school year that was the same as the last? No. We're problem solvers, and so I'm super excited for your next school year, your adventure, the students that are going to be blessed to be in your classrooms, and how we're all going to learn and grow together. If you want to know more about the Teacher Workbox and joining the Organize 365 Workbox Club, just go to organize365.com/workboxes and you'll learn it all there.